It has long been said that ideas are everything, especially in the startup world. But what if having a laser focus on your idea can actually hold your business back? In the Ideas Last podcast, Danielle Gillespie interviews startup founders whose success came from obsessively focusing on execution instead of ideation. Each episode dissects what it actually takes to build a long-lasting, profitable startup rather than simply launching one, but putting your idea last.
Welcome to Ideas Last, the podcast about turning initial sparks into big results. I'm your host, Danielle Gillespie, and I'm excited to learn how top entrepreneurs turn their sparks into thriving companies. Today, we're speaking with Eric Koh. Eric founded his company Hopin in his parents' basement in Ontario with his best friend in 2018. The mission of Hopin is clear and strong: build an ecosystem focused on improving the worker lifestyle by improving a marketplace of innovative solutions to the daily issues impacting the workforce. Hopin moves people not just towards their destinations, but towards a healthier, more productive, and fulfilling life. We have a lot to talk about today, so let's dive right in. Well, Eric, thank you so much for joining us today. I'm really excited to talk to you and hear more about Hopin.
Thanks for having me. It's a real pleasure.
Good. Awesome. So I want to kick off by finding out, what is the story behind Hopin, and what was that initial spark that made you think, wow, I need to give up my life and make this a real product?
It was kind of the perfect intersection of a few different things. I actually grew up with my two co-founders, Boyd and Irwin. Boyd and I met in high school. Irwin, I've known pretty much his whole life. He was my little brother's best friend actually growing up. And we had always talked about starting a business. You know, I'll admit that initially it was going to be a bar because we thought it was cool when we were 21.
Awesome.
But we quickly realized that we wanted to do something that actually provided a good service, like something that helped the world in any way. Around the time, I guess it was 4 years ago now, we were kind of sitting at the bar and realizing that we were complaining more and more about our own commutes to work and school. And I'm sure everybody's had that problem. Everybody I've spoken to has had that problem at one point in their lives. And so we set out to solve that problem, and it kind of snowballed into what it is today, and this larger issue that we think we can help to solve and ultimately get that back to the commute and be able to provide a service for people that can't necessarily afford cars on their own or can't afford to get out to work in remote areas.
Cool. So what was the very first thing you did?
The very first thing we did,
besides pat yourself on the back for a great idea.
Yeah. Well, it wasn't a great idea in the beginning. The very first thing we did, actually, we took a course. We got our first design thinking certification. So I have three of them right now from three different accelerators. But I was a student at Ryerson University in Toronto. We have the DMZ incubator here. And they offered courses to students on design thinking. So I figured if we were going to do this, I was coming from government. Boyd was coming from, you know, enterprise sales, and Irwin was a data student at University of Toronto. We had no idea what to do. So we thought, okay, we need to learn structure first and learn how to actually build a business properly.
Wow. That's actually really great. Not many people go that direction. Myself is a prime example. I just dove right in and built something. So I really like that you started with the design thinking. So you took your course, and then you had to start somewhere with the product. Like, what was the first, like, you have to throw a dart, right? You need to do something. What was that thing you did?
We started on Appy Pie with a hitchhiker app, because the idea was that, okay, you're walking to the bus stop and you see all these cars driving by. You say, why don't I just put my thumb up and see who will pick me up? Right. And so we had like the virtual thumb in the air, and it was terrible. We had zero signups. We had all these people coming in saying, you know, you can't do payments processing that way. Where's the legal? Where's the insurance, et cetera, et cetera. Like, not a single signup. And I don't think we had a single piece of good feedback, like positive feedback. And that's where we started, I guess.
Wow. That's actually awesome. And then where did you go from there?
Then we went back to the drawing board and said, okay, maybe we should apply what we're learning in this course. And we went to ideation. So, you know, it was us sitting in I moved back with my parents to start the company. We were sitting in my mom and dad's basement. We had sticky notes all the way up the wall of the stairs into my parents' living room and dining room. Yeah, just everything in buckets, basically, to say, okay, this is everything that we do need. And we spent probably, 6 months on the ideation.
Wow. So now fast forward a little bit, you've built a product. Can you just give our listeners a high level overview? I mean, we have an idea of what it is, but I think it might be better coming from you.
So now, after the failed hitchhiking app, we offer a logistics software service, and it's geared towards, of course, transportation and the daily commute. Basically, what we do is we go into different regions, look at the companies that are there that are on the outskirts of transit access, and we work with the local bus companies or local rideshare companies. We create like the customized routes and shuttle routes and schedules, and we'll actually run these recurring rides and shuttles every day for the companies and for their employees. So, you know, what we're doing now is improving access to the region. We're working with economic developers, we're working with urban planners and transit agencies to really bridge this gap and close the barrier for these people from mostly underserved communities.
So that seems like it'd be super helpful to a commuter. So now they have reliable transportation to get to their job. What's been the response from employers?
So far with our clients, they love it. And what's really cool is that the larger employers are actually the ones that are signing on more readily. We are designing models to help small businesses as well, but you know, one of our clients, Maple Lodge Farms, they're out here in Toronto. They're just north of us. It's part of their onboarding process now for new employees that you fill out our form, regardless of whether you're riding with us or not, you fill it out, because if you do need it at any point, we can actually insert you into the routes in real time.
Oh, wow. That's pretty great. Mm-hmm. And, I'm sure you get this question a lot. How did COVID-19 sort of change your business model? Did you have to make any pivots or changes, or was it business as usual?
COVID was actually, I don't want to say good for us, that's never a good thing, but it created an interesting opportunity. I'll backtrack, because in the beginning, I think everybody was just in triage mode, right? Like everybody just shut down. There was nothing going on. So rather than try and go back and resell to clients or sell to new ones, we just kind of looked at it and said, okay, we should probably just help for the first few months. So we actually provided free rides to work for healthcare workers. We teamed up with a few restaurants and franchises and actually offered the free meals to them as well. We delivered them.
Oh, wow.
And then we got in touch with a supplier, and we donated about 25,000 masks across Canada last year.
That's amazing.
You know, after all that, it actually opened up quite a few opportunities for us in the sales department. We realized, okay, not everybody is actually at home. Not everybody's remote working right now. There are manufacturers, food processors, you know, everybody that has to go into work still, all those essential workers. They're not comfortable taking transit if they had to before. A lot of them are struggling to get to work. A lot of them are actually falling ill and getting COVID because they have to take public transit. So we saw that as an opportunity, went out to these manufacturers, redesigned our shuttles a little bit and said, look, we can offer COVID-safe shuttling now. So we did all the standard stuff, right? PPE supply, social distancing, sanitizer. And then we teamed up with a local health tech company, and we actually did. So there's a screening that you do, the symptom tracking every morning. And if you come out green, then you can board the bus, and that's kind of your boarding pass, if you will. If you have a symptom, then we ask you to stay home. And then there's another partner that they have that actually brought the test kit to your house, picked it up, and brought the results back to you within 24 to 48 hours.
Oh, wow. Yeah. That sounds like a pretty good pivot.
It was interesting. A good transportation company really should have been dead in the water in COVID. But
yeah, for sure.
Yeah, we saw a lot of our competitors kind of drop off as well. Like the large ones were affected just as badly as the small ones, right?
Yeah, for sure. So, I mean, it sounds like you guys have done a lot of really great stuff. What's something that you think that you really got right? Like in retrospect, you're thinking, well, my journey's been sort of jagged, but this is the one thing I think I really nailed.
I think it was finding that sweet spot between companies and their employees, because with companies, like you need to hit either the CSR goals with them or kind of hit the bottom line or both. With the employees, obviously it's just getting them to work, right? It's getting the access, but not having them like pay for the shuttle themselves, because they wouldn't be able to afford it, right? These are generally lower wage workers. So justifying to the companies, you know, that they should pay for this and they should offer the service to their employees, and then being able to provide a service to the employees that actually meets their needs. That was something I think we really got right. And we're it's showing right now. We have a lot of inbound organic coming in finally. And I think the business is building out and it's proving that it's really working.
That's actually really interesting. And I think that's a place where a lot of young startups sort of struggle, is figuring out how to get their customer to actually buy, right? So is there anything, any sort of advice, without giving away any secret sauce or anything like that? Like, it's different for every case, but there had to have been some sort of thinking in there that you guys sort of just relentlessly pursued to get to the place where someone actually would buy from you.
Yeah, I don't even think there's a secret sauce, to be honest. I don't have any, you know, my co-founder might have secrets that I don't know about. But, we failed a lot in the beginning, right? Because we thought, okay, cool. You know, this massive multinational is interested in what we're doing. And we got right to the door with, I think, three or four of them. And then they just wouldn't sign the contracts. And we couldn't figure out why. And then what we realized is something that our mentors have been telling us the whole time, which is, you need to offer something that's a necessity, not a nice to have. Because nobody will buy a nice to have in the B2B software environment, right? It's not like you're buying a fidget spinner at the dollar store where it's like, oh, this is cool, I'm just going to pick it up for a buck, right?
Yeah.
So realizing, you know, how do we look at what they actually need, right? What are these companies looking at? So we had to go back to the drawing board again with validation. And validation is like the theme of my life now, basically. revalidated the problem, revalidated our solution, like, you know, five solutions that we threw on the board, and then one of them kind of stuck, and that's what we went with. But like really getting down, listening to the customers and saying, okay, this is what they absolutely cannot live without. And that's when we can, you know, we can really understand who's our ideal customer persona, right? You know, what regions are we going to go after, et cetera, et cetera.
Mm-hmm. Did you discover this during the sales process, or did you intentionally set up focus groups, or was there some other way that you kind of came to your conclusions?
No, we had to set up focus groups, and you know, thankfully, social media really does help with that. LinkedIn was huge. We got in touch with quite a few HR managers, you know, operational site leads for these different warehouses and such. And we kind of bucketed them again into their different industries or their roles. We realized the problem that we had through our sales process, but then we said, okay, we need to take a full step back, stop selling, and just redo the validation.
That's actually a really great story. So where do you think most startup entrepreneurs go wrong in their journey? Where do they get off path or go astray?
That's the best question. So I've definitely fallen prey to that many times, and I probably still will. I think they get caught up in the hype. Like, you know, when I first got into startups, I was working for a fintech. I actually worked for free for that fintech for a year to learn how to run a startup. That was part of my education process for myself.
Yeah.
So I quit everything and joined the startup. There were all these really cool things happening. The founder was going on podcasts. He was, I think he was in like an entrepreneur fashion show in Toronto or something. And he was getting so much hype. And I was kind of looking at that saying, oh, that's really cool. So I started going to all these pitch competitions and all these different things, doing interviews. And I was like, wait, I don't even have a business to talk about. and you go through all these accelerators and incubators and things, and you see all these really great young entrepreneurs that are, you know, like myself, are in their 20s, 20s, 30s, you know, even 40s and 50s we've seen, right? And everybody gets caught up in the hype at some point and then kind of forgets for a while that you're just building a business still. That's the biggest thing I see these days.
That's interesting. How does someone reset from getting caught up in that hype?
I mean, for us, we really rely on our advisory board and our mentors. Whenever we're kind of straying too far, they pull us back. And they kind of say, look, you need to build a business still. And they've been really good about that. And that's something that, you know, I asked them to do for us. Because I kind of realized early on that that's something that we would get caught in, and right. It's inevitable, right? You know, everybody wants to be excited about something and do all the really cool things. So we rely on them, but at the same time, like, the numbers never lie, right? You know, we're looking at revenues and we're looking at growth rates and things like that. And if they're not growing month over month, then we say, okay, maybe we're caught in the hype a little bit too much. Maybe we're not working hard enough at the actual core business model.
Right. How many mentors and advisors do you have in your network?
So we have 7 on the advisory board.
Oh, wow. Okay.
And they were all kind of handpicked, and most of them are actually investors as well in the company.
Okay.
My mom included, because my mom and dad, I do everything with them.
That's pretty cool.
Yeah. They're really, like, you know, they have different expertise in the business world. My dad's built a few businesses too, so they help with everything. Mentors, I don't know, at least 50.
Yeah.
There's just so many people that are willing to help and give you advice and things. And I think it's never a bad idea to listen to them. Right. And every so often we get a nugget of wisdom and we actually listen and it works out.
Sometimes old people know stuff. Just kidding. I'm old. So that makes sense. How would you advise somebody to get started looking for a mentor or an advisor? Let's say someone maybe is a little bit introverted. You seem like you're fine talking to people, but sometimes people have great ideas, but they have a difficult time finding those mentors.
If you're a little bit more introverted, I think incubators are a great place to start. If you join up with one and kind of hang around there, eventually somebody will ask you, hey, what are you doing here? And then you can start to talk and you get to know them. Like incubators have so many curated mentors, right? Already, like all these entrepreneurs and residents and executives and residents, they literally come around and just when we were in person, and hopefully we get back to this, they would just sit around the common area. And when you go out for a coffee, they just say, hey, and you start to talk. If you're a little bit more extroverted, I get out anywhere. I used to go to conferences and I used to go to those like massive talks and things, right? TED Talks and everything, and just talk to anybody and everybody that I could.
That's good. That's awesome. So maybe back to your business a little bit here. What do you think is your biggest personal block that you continue to wrestle with? And it may be, you know, really as it relates to your business.
I'm definitely more of a dreamer. So I do tend to go to the idea side more. And I think that's why we divided the roles as such with my co-founders. I set the vision and the pace of the company a bit more. And that kind of, you know, for obvious reasons, it gets away from you sometimes and you kind of go astray from the business itself. This is something that my co-founders and I actually, we sat down a while ago and talked about and said, look, we always need to keep each other in check. So we have our weekly founders meetings every Sunday where we just kind of talk about strategy or whatever's going on, course correct each other. And like every week is kind of a difficult conversation, especially these days where we say, look, these are some hard facts that we need to hear, right? I think you need co-founders. They're the only ones that are going to ground you from your problems, right? Like the other ones who will sit and tell me, like literally last week they sat and told me, Eric, you got to sit and make sure you do X, Y, Z, right? We're in the middle of raising our seed round right now. And they're saying, look, you got to make sure you sit down and do X, Y, Z and stop thinking about what you're going to do with the money afterwards.
Right. So yeah. What is your division in your company? So you're the visionary, the idea guy. What are the other two? How do they?
Yeah. So I do vision, I do finance, and I deal with the legal.
Okay.
My degree's in business law, so I just kind of gravitated towards that. And my co-founders absolutely hate the legal work. So and everything they don't want to do, I do basically.
Okay. Sounds good.
And Boyd is he's kind of our COO. He runs the operations and the day-to-day operations as well. He heads up sales because that's where his experience lies.
Okay.
And then he kind of crosses with Erwin, who's our technology officer. Erwin runs technology and data. So right now they're building products and building software algorithms for us.
Okay.
Yeah.
And as you're building your products, are you building in features that help show how users are using your products or like stats or stuff like that? Or could you share anything about how you know what people are doing with your product?
that's where it's a bit difficult because we, you know, there's compliance with privacy law, obviously, right, in cybersecurity.
Sure. Yeah.
And like, we're also noticing that like there's a bare minimum standard, and then there's what's actually ethical and what you should do. So we do track to a degree what they're doing with it, but I mean, okay, so we built a separate driver app and a rider app, right? Okay. We didn't need to build a driver app because we had a tracking chip in the trucks anyways. They already had it, or in the buses, they already had it before we even came.
Okay.
But we did that so we could take the data and track it from the rides itself instead of tracking individual location data from the people riding on the bus, right? Because it's the same thing. We don't need to track personal data like that.
Right.
But, you know, we're looking at things like days that you're absent, right? Looking at trends for, especially with remote work and that hybrid model coming in, like what days are people really starting to come in more and more? Can we see patterns there operationally? You know, can we tell the companies, look, your employees usually come in Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday. Nobody's in on Thursday and Friday. You should stop serving lunch at the cafeteria for 15,000 people now. Maybe cut it down to 5,000, right? Keep the lights off in certain areas of the building on those days. You can definitely save on your costs that way. So we're taking the data that we do have and really applying it to anything and everything, you know, in the day-to-day activity of a workplace.
That actually has some really sort of, could have some great outcomes for the employers, I think. Mm-hmm.
That's a byproduct, actually. Like, that's kind of what it shows us now. The data we're collecting is going towards something even crazier with machine learning that we're building in the next 5 years, I'd say.
Yeah, for sure. So one thing I'm kind of interested in hearing about is what's on the horizon for Hopin? Where are you dreaming big for the next 5 years or 3 years or 2 years?
Definitely expansion, like geographic expansion. Canada is it's a good, safe market to build a business in. But if you want to scale, you know, I think it's never been a secret that you got to go down to the States where you guys are. You got to go to, you know, Latin America is pretty big. We're going to try to go through North America first, I think, and then look at other parts of the world afterwards. But we've got our hooks into a few places already. All the places that are kind of boring and that you wouldn't think there would be a need for tech like this.
Like what?
North Dakota, let's say. That's a place. Yeah,
that's fair.
But they're actually crazy innovative down there, and they're really receptive to innovation and technology, right? The governor sold this company to Microsoft years and years ago. They have one of the largest autonomous vehicle corridors in North America there as well, like test corridors.
Wow.
Yeah. So you'd think that the places you'd think are boring, but actually the ones that need this tech a little bit more than anybody else, right? And really appreciate it, I think, more than anyone else.
Yeah. Wow. That's pretty cool. Are there any sort of foreseeable challenges that you see in sort of tackling the scale?
I mean, I think there are the usual challenges, right? Like, you got to scale the team in proportion to how you're scaling the business, right? And not making sure you're not hiring too much and getting ahead of your revenues, but having your team catch up to the revenues that you're building. That was definitely a mistake that we made in some of the past companies I worked with. I think for us also, it's new, right? Like, this model isn't, you know, although it's pretty simple, it's not really been done before. So we're looking at, you know, different partnerships and how that's going to look legal from a legal perspective with bus companies, with different, you know, property managers or cities or regions, right? It's like a customized partnership every single time that you have to craft right now. There's no template yet.
I see. Yeah,
it takes a bit of time.
Well, that seems like that might pose more of a technical challenge than a logistic challenge. Is that right? Or
it's a little bit of both, like more technical. Yeah. I mean, from the logistics perspective, we need these partnerships to gain access to certain information as well and kind of be able to move a bit more freely in the regions. Mm-hmm. So, it kind of backs onto a logistical problem, I guess.
Yeah. Interesting. So I guess one last question, going off script here, what is the next big thing you're thinking about as it relates to anything? Could be your company, could be you, could be the world, could be tech, whatever you want.
I mean, one of the things that got really fascinated with building this company is like smart technology and autonomous vehicles, right? Because it really is our future. But what I'm more interested in is not the end goal where 15, 20 years from now, we all have these really crazy vehicles and you know, there's Wi-Fi all over the city and things. I'm interested in the autonomous gap between that, where it's not so much of a technological change necessarily that we're waiting for, but it's also like a cultural change, right? My parents would never have been comfortable with me riding an autonomous school bus, right? They would have freaked out.
Right.
Is everybody going to own an autonomous vehicle and get dropped off at the grocery store and have 50 cars circling one block for 2 hours while they shop, creating more congestion, right? These are some of the questions I'm interested in having answered. And I definitely think it's something that we are tackling with our business, right? We're getting people comfortable with the idea of communal ride sharing in its truest form. And we're looking at different smart technology from infrastructure perspective as well.
Well, that's really great. I loved everything you said here today. It was really been awesome talking to you. You have a ton of energy and certainly very skilled in your area. I think we can call it a wrap there. Thank you so much for being with me today and having this conversation. I love hearing about Hoppin, and I can't wait to see what happens next for you guys.
Well, thank you. I really appreciate you having me on the show and everybody for reaching out. This is really cool.
Yeah, it's really cool.